You're listening to the New Mamas Podcast.
I'm excited to welcome Alyssa Wharton-Hunt back to the podcast. Fun fact, Alyssa was in season one and actually has the top most listened to episode on there about going back to work, having a baby. Such a hot topic. I think this is also another really hot topic, is going from one baby to two, to adding a sibling. I have so many questions for you, Alyssa, because this is something that's obviously actively on my, not obviously, but it's like been active on my mind because, you know, when is the right time and what does it look like? And I can't wait to hear more. So, and a little more about Alyssa. She's a working mom out of San Francisco, mom of two, obviously, that's what we're talking about today, and wife to her husband, Ben. Did I miss anything? I mean, obviously, there's so much more to you, but is there anything you want to add?
No, I think that sums it up. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so excited to talk to you again. Always excited to talk to you. I had the privilege of being your first episode on season one. So yeah, just really excited that you wanted to talk again.
Isn't it crazy that you have like the top most listened to episode?
Well, I feel like being episode one might help, but I'm very honored that people want to hear that. And I think it's just really such an important topic, going back to work, how to survive the juggling act between work and family. It's something that I think every working mom that I know is wrestling with on a daily basis. It's just how to keep sight of your own goals while being the best parent you can be.
Yeah, I feel, and it's not just because you were the first episode, like it keeps, because every week I get like the podcast that like what's been listened to, and your episode weekly shows up in there. I think people are searching for that topic.
Yeah. Yeah. I know for me, when I went back to work, I was frantically looking for guidance and support on the internet and listening to all the podcasts. And there really is not enough conversation, I don't think, out there, although the pandemic has sort of brought it to light a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so too. When we recorded that, I wasn't like really truly back at work yet, or Archie was so young. I just remember saying like, oh, I'm juggling. And you were looking at me like I had like 10 heads and you were like, how are you juggling? And I was like, I have no idea. And then he turned 6 months and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like,
yeah,
it's impossible.
I was so happy for you the day you told me that you finally had childcare. I don't know how you were making it work before that. It's too much. It's too much for anyone.
No. Yeah. It's like, it's unsustainable. Mm-hmm. But now, good segue. So you're still on maternity leave with Emmy. Second.
Yeah. So my son Henry is two. And in November this year, I had my daughter Amelia, who is now 2 months old. We call her Emmy. And yeah, it's been a real transition. It's been a lot and challenging and wonderful and all of those things at the same time. It's great. It's nice to be able to just focus on family right now when she's so small.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. So how old was Henry when you first got pregnant with Emmy?
When I found out I was pregnant with Emmy, Henry was 16 months old. And
oh, girl.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because he really just still felt like a baby to me. And I definitely wrestled with some feelings of guilt finding out that we were pregnant again. We had tried to get pregnant with Henry for almost a year. So it was a pretty long journey trying to get pregnant the first time. I did all of the, you know, acupuncture and the gluten-free, dairy-free diets and all of that, all the tests and all the, you know, everything. And it was a long, grueling process the first time. And we were able to get pregnant in under a year. We never actually needed to have any like real fertility support. I sort of thought that that was our norm and that was, you know, going to be the experience that we were going to have, you know, every time that we tried to have kids, and we knew we wanted to. So when Henry was 15 months old or whatever he was, a little after he turned one, I just started having that feeling like, okay, if we want to have a second child, I don't want them to be too far apart in age. Maybe we should start thinking about trying now so that, you know, if it takes a year again, I won't be stressed out about it. I'll be happy if it happens in a year. And so month one, we decided, you know, okay, well, let's just see what happens. Let's just, you know, stop using birth control and just, you know, ride this wave and hope that it happens within a year. And 2 weeks later, I was pregnant. So it was really kind of a shock. You know, I think that happens to a lot of people. Like they say, let's see what happens. And it happens right away. But because my first experience had been so different to that, I was just totally blown away. It was pretty wild.
I remember when you guys were trying, and I actually asked Ben, because I wasn't sure if you guys had done IVF. And then Ben let me know. He's like, oh no, it just finally, like after you said a little under a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got pregnant. I mean, that's like, so I feel like if that happened to me, I would also assume the second time around would, you know, take a little bit. So right. I can only imagine your shock.
It was super weird. And I don't know if this is like too much information, but for anybody out there who might be, you know, might've had a similar experience getting pregnant the first time, taking a while, that sort of thing. I had gotten a diagnosis of PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, and can look so many different ways for so many different women. But essentially it means that you're not ovulating, you know, not every cycle you're ovulating or your periods are wacky. It means that you have cysts on your ovaries and that can impact your ovulation. What it looked like for me was that I was getting my period every 2 to 3 months. And This was after I came off birth control. I'd been on the pill for 10 years, you know, and my periods were so like these like really crazy long cycles. So we had no idea how to time things. So, you know, it took a long time before I started to figure out how to time things. Once we figured that out, it took a couple of tries still. So that's what took so long. And so I was expecting to have a similar situation the second time around. But when I finished breastfeeding Henry at 12 months, my periods came back monthly, like clockwork, like wow. They're supposed to, you know, every 28 days. So it was just really kind of crazy. And I couldn't really trust that. I think, you know, it felt so surreal to suddenly have this regular cycle. So I'm not sure whether pregnancy cured my PCOS or whether the long cycles had to do with coming off of birth control for such a long time. Really never had any answers to that. But just if anyone's listening out there that had a similar experience, you never know what's going to happen the second time around.
Thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of women don't know they have PCOS, especially younger women too. There's such a lack in women's health care when you're like after a pediatrician and you go and you become an adult.
Yeah.
It's hard to learn about your body, and you have to be armed with that if you're trying to conceive. We had another gal on the podcast who had PCOS and had a very kind of a similar story. They prescribed her birth control so that her cycle would become regular, and then she went off of it. And that helped a lot. But that's so interesting.
I'm one of those people who gets a little obsessive when, you know, there's something I can't let go of. And I really dove deep into the internet and did my research on PCOS, listened to so many podcasts and read books and all of this. And my theory is that one day PCOS will be many different disorders. I think it looks so different for so many different women. You know, the kind of classic symptoms, you might not have all of those classic symptoms, but you might still have the cysts on your ovaries and the irregular cycles and skipping ovulations. So there's so much out there, I think, that's yet to be discovered. And I hope that one day more information is available for people who are going through it, because it impacts more than just fertility too. It's definitely an important topic for anybody who's struggling with it.
Thank you for sharing that. Definitely my sister. I have a suspicion. My mom has always had cysts on her ovaries and on her uterus. And my sister has really bad irregular periods, very painful. Like she really, and she suffers with allergies like her whole life. She was diagnosed with anemia, but not PCOS. But every time I hear about PCOS, I'm like, Gabby, I really do think you have PCOS. But I think, like you said, there's just not enough research on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't really diagnose it until you go to the doctor with a real problem. Like struggling to get pregnant, I think, is one of the times that a lot of women find out about it. But it's unfortunate they're not able to get diagnosed sooner than that in their lives to help with those symptoms. And they can lead to abnormal hair growth and hair loss and lots of pain and, you know, all kinds of issues that are just, you know, it's not worth having that when you could have a diagnosis and have some treatment or find ways to manage it. That was part of my journey with getting pregnant the first time. The second time, it was a bit of a, not surprise, but a shock that it happened when it did.
You mentioned that you felt a little bit of guilt. Can you tell me more about that?
Oh gosh. Yeah. That was really a predominant feeling for me throughout my pregnancy, but especially the beginning of my pregnancy. I think a lot of moms might experience that. You have your first child, they're your baby. They're literally the center of your universe. And then to imagine adding one more, is when the reality hits that there's going to be another, I couldn't stop feeling guilty for sort of robbing Henry of his babyhood, you know, feeling like he's not going to be able to be my one and only baby anymore. His world's going to change so much. You know, looking back, he was 16 months old when we found out we were pregnant. He was 2 by the time that she was born. And a lot changes in there. He grew up so much, immatured so much, be sort of thinking about juggling it with the baby you have, but your baby's going to grow up a lot in the 9 months that you're pregnant, whatever age they are when you start. And there's a lot of time to prepare them, but I definitely wrestled with a lot of feelings of guilt. And honestly, I still sometimes do, but for both of them. Also, Henry was 16 months, which is how old I was when my sister was born. It was sort of trippy, you know, just thinking about my own childhood and what my mom must have experienced having another baby and a 16-month-old. She basically had 2 babies. You know, I definitely felt for her and what that must have been like, and maybe had some feelings of, you know, sort of the guilt was sort of wrapped up in my own sense of like, hey, yeah, I did lose my babyhood. You know, I was a baby when there was another baby in the family. But it also helped to think of it that way because my sister is my best friend and like the best thing that ever happened to me. So I tried to sort of counteract that guilt by saying, but look, you know, he's getting a sibling and that is the best gift ever, hopefully.
I'm almost like tearing up a little bit. Like, I thought it was ambitious to ask you even to be on this podcast.
No, it's great. It's great. I need exciting things in my days. That's the one thing about maternity leave. It's wonderful. And I'm, you know, finding that I have a bit of time to do a little bit of personal sort of projects and, you know, like I've been doing some LinkedIn learning or whatever, doing a bit of like brushing up for when I get back to work and things like that. But I need things to look forward to because sometimes the days are a little like monotonous, you know, and just doing baby naps and all of that.
So we were talking about siblings and like wanting siblings. So are you the oldest and it's you and your sister, or do you have another sibling as well?
Yeah, I'm the oldest and my sister is 16 months younger than me. And then we have a younger brother who is 6 years younger than me. So yeah, he's the baby
of the family. Okay. And do you think and then I know Ben, your husband, also has siblings. Mm-hmm. Do you think both of you having siblings affected you wanting to have more?
Definitely. I mean, we both knew right away. I think we talked about this the last time that we talked. We knew as soon as we got together as a couple that we wanted kids. You know, I mean, that was always something we were working towards and looking forward to. Definitely wanted more than one. And I think, so my husband, he has 2 older half siblings, but his, you know, with his 2 parents, he also has 2 younger siblings. So both of us were sort of the oldest of 3 growing up. Mm-hmm. And we sort of imagined ourselves with 3, I think, or at least I did. And now that they're here, we're like, 2 is enough. That's the end.
I love that you said that because I think I always imagined myself with like 3 because I had my sister and I, but I always wanted, like, I wish we were a bigger family growing up. But now I'm like, maybe I might tap out at 2. I don't know. We'll really have to see. But I love to hear that. And actually, when you and Ben met, you had kind of got the children talk out of the way. Same with John and I. It was like literally our first date. And I was like, do you want kids? Yes, no. Yes. Do you want? I was like very checklist, like looking for a husband, not for a hookup. But for everyone listening, Ben and I used to work at the same company. That's how Alyssa and I met. And we were on a business trip and we were at a concert. It was like one of those company concerts. And there was a love song playing. And I'll never forget, Ben like almost had like tears in his eyes. And he was like, I just need to text my wife really quick and tell her that I love her. Did I ever tell you that story?
That's so sweet. I can't imagine him doing that, but that's very sweet.
Wait, really? It's one of like the fondest memories I had. Cause I was like, oh my God, it's so cute. So anyway,
that's very sweet. That's very sweet. But for anyone listening, Ben is a very like put together Englishman who, you know, for sure his feelings are, he's stiff upper lip in a big time way. So it's sort of hard to imagine him crying and saying he needs to text me, but that's so sweet. He really is a big softie underneath his repressed British exterior.
I mean, okay. I don't think tears fell, but tears were like definitely watery. It could have been also because he had a couple drinks. Maybe he was a little looser.
Yeah, no, he is moved by music and movies. He cries more at TV than I do. That's true. He definitely does.
It's so cute. But Yeah, it's, I mean, it helps being on the same page. But so John and I are, John says he's happy. He's like, I'm happy with Archie. Not that we disagree, but I don't think he's as passionate about adding a second sibling as I am, because he's an only child. He doesn't know what it's like to have a sibling.
Yeah, so that's big. It's a big thing when you have siblings. I can't imagine my life without my siblings. So to not have a sibling to play with as a kid, and then as an adult, I think it's even more valuable, you know, just one day taking care of your parents and all of that. And also just having that deep, deep connection. You just can't have it with anyone else, I don't think, if you didn't grow up together.
Yeah. They have the ability to hold like your deepest, darkest everything. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister is 9 years younger than me, but we're very, very close. So
9 years. Wow. So you have both experiences of being an only child and a sibling.
And, you know, I found it particularly lonely. Like, I think I was, you know, I was always reading and like I found activities to do by myself, but I think I was always a very social kid and just wanted to have that experience. What were you most excited for baby number two?
Yeah, I know. I feel bad. I always sort of talk about, you know, my pregnancy with Emmy and everything as being really, you know, I was feeling guilty and I was feeling sick and horrible and I didn't enjoy it. But around halfway through the pregnancy, I started to become more excited. I mean, finding out that she was a girl was really exciting for me. I mean, I think like maybe a lot of other women, I sort of always secretly hoped I'd have one daughter. I always really wanted the experience of having a son and a daughter. It was great. It was so exciting to find out that we had Henry and then we were going to have a baby girl. So, and I think it also helped me think of her as something separate from Henry. I think if I'd found out I was having another boy, might've had a little bit of a hard time thinking there's going to be a baby boy, but it won't be Henry. Won't be the baby boy that I know. Cause I already had a little bit of that, you know, who is this baby? Who is this baby I'm growing? I felt sort of disconnected from her, but finding out she was a girl helped kind of give her already a little bit of her own identity for me and to bond with her. Finding out the sex of my kids both times really helped me connect. There's lots of Team Green out there, like fun surprise. But for me, I wanted to know like as soon as possible because it helped me kind of connect to them. Just, I guess, visualizing this human. I was excited for Henry to have a sibling. I was excited for the future, sort of imagining my kids running around playing with each other. I was excited for certain aspects of the newborn phase. Actually, I think when we found out we were pregnant again, both Ben and I had some feelings of dread because I think the first time you find out you're having a baby, it's all just magical, wonderful.
Bliss, ignorance.
Right. And you have all this time when you're pregnant, but don't have kids already to kind of take care of yourself and all of that. This time I was just chasing a toddler around. I was definitely much sicker this second pregnancy. I think maybe that was because I was so tired. I just didn't feel that great during most of my pregnancy this time. So there was a lot of dread finding out, okay, I know the challenges of pregnancy. Oh my gosh, I'm going to go through childbirth again, postpartum, you know, which is like a whole thing. And then, you know, the kind of dread of having to do some of the harder aspects of parenting again. You know, we'd already gotten through sleep training and eating solids and figuring out naps and whatever, all of that. To have to do it again was a little daunting. Ben was definitely afraid of the newborn stage again. I think dads in the newborn stage, it's hard for them. You know, I actually was really looking forward to the newborn stage again. And I think because I knew I was going to get maternity leave and be able to focus on this baby, which, you know, dad in our family doesn't have, you know, he had a month off, but he was, you know, now he's back at work trying to juggle everything in his life. And I'm getting to focus on her and it's great. I love newborns because they're just so sweet and those snuggles, you know, so I'm just trying to really like breathe her in because I know that she's going to grow up and start running around. So I was excited for some of those things.
I love that you are very transparent though about the wave of emotions. And I think not a lot of women talk about the guilty feelings and like not feeling great the first time, because I think that's why this is such a daunting topic, because all you really see is, oh, we're excited. Oh, we're excited. But you're like, I kind of want to see like the real of adding a second child, because it's not helpful if people only share like the highlight reel. So I really appreciate it. It's interesting how you brought up finding out the sex. I kind of thought about that. Like I thought about what if we keep it a surprise? I was really afraid of gender disappointment. I don't know. It's weird because now that I have a boy, you know, because Henry, you also have a boy. I was like, okay, boy mom. I am identifying as this boy mom. Would be kind of cool to have two boys. But one thing that I'm really nervous about is Archie really is my, like, he really feels like my one and only. I can't imagine having my heart love another child as much as I love him. Is that mess? It's like, it's weird coming out of my mouth, but I never really imagined myself with a little girl. Not until I saw Emmy and I'm like, oh, she's so cute. But maybe that you're right. Like, maybe part of that journey is helpful because they are so separate.
I don't know. I think that the feelings that you have of Archie being your one and only and not being able to imagine another are completely normal. And honestly, even finding out she was a girl, it just helped a little bit with giving her this kind of other identity that I could kind of attach myself to. But really, throughout the whole pregnancy, I wondered and worried whether I could love another kid as much as I love the one I already had. And I felt guilty about that too. But I talked to a lot of friends. I was lucky to have a lot of friends and my sister going through a second pregnancy at the same time. I think those feelings, you know, everybody expressed some version of those feelings.
How did you prepare Henry for having a newborn in the house? I think that's the other thing I'm very nervous about because I don't know. I don't know. Like, I think every parent goes through it, but it's like, Archie's very like,
he's used to the world that he lives in for sure.
Yeah.
And he's used to being the center of it. And that is really a hard transition. I worried about it constantly throughout my pregnancy and asked lots of friends, did lots of reading, tried to figure out the exact best way to prepare him. I used a few resources like Big Little Feelings. I don't know if you follow them on Instagram for toddler.
Love
know, everything toddler. They have some good advice about preparing for a sibling. You know, just did lots of other kind of research and reading and talking to friends. We just started talking about it early with him, you know, that he was going to have a baby sister, baby was in mommy's belly, all of that. Tried to talk about it regularly, but not constantly, you know, and sort of follow his like interest level. A lot of the time he didn't want to talk about it, it seemed like. So I would drop it. Sometimes he would engage, kiss my belly, get excited, whatever. So it was sort of just, I was trying to just sort of follow his lead on how much to talk about it and how far to go with that conversation. Sometimes we just mention it, you know, oh, mommy's having a hard time getting up because baby sister's getting big in my belly, that kind of thing. Just kind of trying to get him used to the idea, you know, and then started as the time got closer, starting to talk about the fact that she was going to be here and be part of our family, but just like a sentence here and there, just to kind of keep it as part of his world, but not a constant topic of conversation. He had a baby doll that he played with and he loved his baby doll. It was really cute. And we would just, sort of practice like changing his diaper and feeding the baby and that sort of thing, just a little bit. And then otherwise just let him carry his baby doll around, sort of encouraged kisses for the baby, things like that. He goes to an in-home daycare and it's really small. And he and another one of the kids there were both expecting baby siblings at the same time. So
awesome.
It was great. Yeah. Our nanny who runs the daycare, she spent some time practicing baby stuff with them too, just sort of having their dolls out, changing the diapers, that sort of thing. You know, I bought all the books, you know, I'm going to be a big brother, Berenstain Bears baby, this, that, and the other thing. Tried to watch shows about it. Ultimately, the only one that he really would stick with and was interested in was the Daniel Tiger Big Brother book. Daniel Tiger is great. If anyone out there is not already watching Daniel Tiger, but honestly, I can't get Henry to sit through a whole episode most of the time.
Me neither. I know.
And so it's more for the parents, but the books are good. He really likes the Daniel Tiger books. And so we would, when he was having dinner or lunch or something, we would read the Daniel Tiger Big Brother book. He really loved that. I mean, maybe other kids like other books, you know, I would say just try different things, you know, buy a few and see what sticks. But the only one he would stick with was Daniel Tiger, the book, not even the episode.
The show.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned he was 16 months when you found out you're pregnant. I feel like developmentally, like that 9 months between 16 months and two something, they change so much. I'm seeing that now. Archie's 20 months and I can just tell, like, I feel like he's on the brink of just really being able to communicate more and understand more. And he understands, I feel like they understand more than they can vocalize.
Oh, for sure. I mean, at the point Henry is at now, he's 27 months, so two and a few months. And he understands everything. And I definitely think 20 months was a big milestone for some reason. I remember him being 20 months and thinking, wow, he's really starting to understand more, you know, following more complicated directions, saying more words. But now he's not talking in full sentences yet, really, or anything, you know, short little things. but he understands everything, and it's wild. So every day he's just getting, you know, becoming more and more of a real little person.
Oh, it's so weird because I'm so used to seeing him as like a little, like every time I see him on video, I'm like, how do you have so many teeth? Like where all these teeth come from?
Yeah, they do just sort of appear, don't they? Like you're counting them when they first start showing up, and then all of a sudden they have a full set of teeth. You're like, wait, when did that happen?
Hey everyone, it's your host, Lena Forrestal, taking a quick break from this podcast episode to ask you to support the show. I do this show because I love it. And as a self-funded creator, your support can help me pay for things like podcast hosting and an editor. So here's how you can help. Share this episode with a mom friend, caretaker, or soon-to-be mom friend. Leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And if you wanted to throw me some coins, you can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Any little bit helps, and I appreciate your support. Finally, give me a follow on Instagram at Lena Forrestal. I love meeting my listeners, so definitely send me a DM and introduce yourself. Now, let's get back to the show.
I was so curious. I didn't even get to talk to you about your birth story. So, okay, Alyssa shares about her first birth story in the first podcast. I'll link it. But I remember, and tell me if I got it wrong, the first time around, you were not able to receive the epidural because when you got to the hospital, you were already like too dilated or something like that.
They wanted to do first the lab tests and they wanted to put me on an IV to get fluids in me. And by the time all of that was done, they were like, you can have the epidural now. And I said, you might want to check me because I think I need to push. So it was like very quick. I mean, I think it was like he was born within 2 or 3 hours of getting to the hospital. But they thought as a first time mom that I had, you know, tons and tons of time.
Yes.
And I was 5 centimeters when I arrived at the hospital. And so like 2 hours later, I was at 10. So it was kind of a quick transition. And so, yeah, it was pretty fast overall, my labor with him. Although I had had during the day, I had had contractions that were just very mild, but a little step up from Braxton Hicks. So I think looking back, you know, I just didn't know really what those contractions meant. I thought, oh, this is probably happening soon, but maybe these will go on for a day, 2 days. So I was definitely more prepared the second time around, anticipating giving birth a second time. You know, I sort of put it off in my mind until maybe the last month before she was born. And then suddenly it hit me. Oh my gosh, going to go through that again. And I realized over the course of like Henry's 2 years of life, I realized that his birth had been a little bit traumatic for me. I think birth is always a trauma a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, that's why like when I was pregnant the second time, Ben noticed that every time we were in a room full of women, we started like, it just started to be this birth hour. Like everybody's like sharing their birth stories, and dissecting them and talking about them. And I think it's just something that's, it's an important, huge moment in your life, no matter what it ends up looking like. And so I think it is a little bit traumatic maybe for everyone and or also wonderful and exhilarating and all of that. It just sticks with you for the rest of your life. So I was kind of wrestling with some of the feelings I had about Henry's birth. I was feeling like, you know, Ben had actually mentioned that he felt like Henry's birth was a bit shocking for him. I mean, first of all, Henry got taken away to the NICU. That's also an important part of that story. And I think both of us were pretty shaken by that. We just didn't expect it or prepare ourselves for that, you know, eventuality. And even though he was in the NICU only for a couple of days and we were never really worried for his life, just, you know, how long it would take for him to get up to speed, we were, I think both really impacted by it. I think that he also was kind of shaken by maybe as part of that experience, how disconnected he felt from this newborn. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of expect to have a baby and just fall madly in love right away. But I think for dads and moms, sometimes that doesn't happen and it took time. So I think all of that was a little surprising for him and sort of disappointing for him. So I felt like we needed to talk more before we had a second baby and get more like connected about, I don't know, just what I wanted during the birth and how he could feel like he was a really important part of it, because he was such an important part of it for me. At the same time, I think he also felt kind of helpless the first time around. Like, how can I really help you? Because you're in so much pain. I can't take it away. you know? Yeah. So we just had a lot more conversations in the weeks leading up to Emmy's birth, I think, than we had leading up to Henry's. And it helped, I think, you know, we sort of talked through what happened the first time. He gave me a little bit of a reminder of what really happened. You know, like I have my version of the story, but he sort of told me like the real story, which also kind of helped me understand like what was happening on the outside, you know, like at different points in time, because it was this big blur for me that I couldn't really remember. Yeah. I think I went to another planet, you know, to kind of deal with the pain. And he kind of reminded me what really happened, which helped me feel kind of more grounded about just the progress of everything and what was going to happen the second time. It helped us be more connected about going into this as a team, sort of. And so when it actually happened, Emmy was due on a Friday. And on the Monday of that week, I went to the doctor for my 39-week checkup. She checked my cervix. I remember waking up that morning feeling like labor was miles away. You know, Henry had been born 3 days early. So I was kind of thinking, okay, well, if she's born tomorrow, she'll be 3 days early. But I don't feel anything. I just don't feel labor coming on. So guess maybe she'll come a little later, you know, whatever. So I went to the doctor. She checked my cervix. She said, you're 3 centimeters dilated and nice. Very, very soft. So, you know, and my doctor had warned me many times that my labor was likely to be pretty quick the second time around, just having it been quick the first time. We'd actually explored the option, the idea of an elective induction, because I was feeling really anxious about having a fast labor. I was anxious about having a baby in the car. I was anxious about how I was going to say goodbye to Henry. You know, what if I'm like suddenly in the throes of labor and he's seeing me in that pain and he's worried and I run out the door? Or what if he goes to daycare and doesn't get to say goodbye to me, or, you know, things like that.
Ooh.
I was just really, I was really worked up about that and wondering what a quick labor would look like with saying goodbye to him. So I guess just in that desire to have some control over the situation, I explored getting induced. The day we had talked about getting induced was Tuesday, November 30th. But I decided ultimately not to do it. I just was like, induction, you know, it's just like, it could take forever or it couldn't, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know. I kind of wanted to let her just come on her own, you know, when she was ready, that sort of thing. I also felt like possibly an induction could be, you know, if I'm going to have this quick, straightforward birth, like I had the first time, was so lucky to have the first time, maybe I'll get that again. And, you know, it'll be quicker and easier just to let it happen on its own. So I decided against the induction. So that's sort of the backstory. So then on the Monday, the day before November 30th, I started after that doctor's appointment, having those contractions again that I had early on with Henry. Those are like, they're not painful for me, but they're just stronger and tighter than your regular Braxton Hicks, you know, and they were just coming, you know, pretty frequently. Like I was definitely having like 6 in an hour, but then they'd go away for an hour and then they'd come back 6 in an hour or something. And then they'd go away. And so they're, you know, 10 minutes apart and then they're 45 minutes apart. And then, you know, it was just so wacky.
You're like, what's going on?
Yeah. So, but as that kept going on throughout the day, I started to think, I like called my mom and my sister and I said, I think this is it. I think, but I don't know. I decided just to keep an eye on it throughout the day. And then around 5 p.m. on Monday, after Henry got home from daycare and we were all together, the contractions kind of picked up again. I had 6 in an hour or whatever. And I said to Ben, I think we should just go to my parents' house now. That's where Henry was going to be sleeping for the birth. So I said, why don't we just go to my parents' house now and spend the night? Because what if my water breaks in the middle of the night and we have to rush to the hospital, whatever. To preface the water breaking thing, my doctor had told me, she said, I think when your water breaks, you're going to have a baby in an hour. That was like her prediction. The same thing had happened to my sister, who had very similar births to me. She was in the hospital at the time, but they broke her water and he was born an hour later, you know, that kind of thing. So I just had this fear of my water breaking, because I felt like once my water breaks, it's going to be an emergency, you know, like it's going to be quick.
Right. And like, how far are you from the hospital? And then there's there's like a process.
Yes. Triage. Oh my gosh. And if you don't mind listening, I'll go into the triage experience. The second time around was really different from the first. So we spent the night at my parents, and after dinner and everything, I felt normal, no contractions. And I was like, I'm so embarrassed. You know, I've put everyone through this whole labor dance and I'm not in labor, you know?
Labor dance. LOL. Yeah.
My mom was so encouraging. She was like, you know, I think you are in really early labor. You know your body, like just listen to yourself and just don't worry about it. We're all waiting for the same thing, you know. Then throughout the night, I was having contractions. At 5 a.m, I said to Ben, you know, they're not too bad yet, but maybe we should go to the hospital because, you know, they're starting to pick up again. So we showered, we got ourselves ready and planned to like wake up Henry and then all of that. And then they went away again, no contractions for another hour. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
So ultimately though, what had happened was Henry had gotten this night at his grandparents' house to kind of ease in. And in the morning we told him, you know, I knew that it was coming soon basically. And I had a feeling I wasn't going to see him after daycare. So we got to say goodbye, told him the baby was coming, all of that. So I was so just relieved and happy that I got to give him a real goodbye before. It just felt so monumental to me, that kind of like, this is the last time you're my only baby and, you know, your world's about to change, and really wanted to make sure that we got a good goodbye in and that he felt as comfortable as possible with saying goodbye and being with his grandparents for a couple of days. So we got to do that. My mom and dad took him to daycare and I had no contractions. So Ben and I went shopping and I was like shoe shopping, but kind of having some contractions and it was very mild. Then we went out to lunch and during lunch they picked up again. And my sister was with us. She had met up with us and she said, go to the hospital right now. My mom was saying the same thing. My sister and mom were really advocating, go to the hospital, see if they'll admit you. And like, that way you're there when, you know, because you're clearly in early labor, who knows how long this is going to go on, but you know, when it becomes painful and when your water breaks, like at least you're there, you know, if they'll admit you. So we finally decided to go to the hospital it was like 2:00 on Tuesday. This is November 30th. And we were like, you know, got to the hospital. I was kind of embarrassed walking in to labor and delivery because I wasn't really in pain. You know, I was having these like mild contractions here and there, but they sent me to triage. So it was so funny going to triage the second time. Cause when I had arrived at the hospital with Henry, I was like in full blown transition, like just dying, like so in so much pain, couldn't keep it together. And I kind of didn't remember what they did in triage, but it turns out it's like just very boring and also relaxed when you're not in like the throes of labor. So Ben and I were just kind of hanging out there in triage. They ran some tests. They ultimately said, okay, heart rate's dipping a bit with contraction, so we're going to induce you. So while we're waiting for them to set up the Pitocin and everything, they sort of left us alone, let us get dinner. And around 6:00, our dinner had arrived and we were like watching TV in the hospital room. And suddenly the contractions picked up. And this time I was like, oh, this is different. They were every 5 minutes and they hurt. And I was like, okay. I think this is like the real thing. I think this is the real thing. And then at 7:00, my water broke. And then it was just like all hell broke loose for me. I mean, I was like, oh God, like, yeah, this is like really happening. I mean, the contractions were so strong and just back to back and on top of each other. Luckily, I had told them that I wanted the nitrous oxide again for this labor. So as soon as my water broke, Ben like bringing the nurses in, was like, she wants nitrous oxide. And they got it set up for me. And it was great. I was like, hello, old friend. Ben was like, you feel better. It's like the nitrous just changed everything for me. I felt really took the edge off and helped me just kind of check out and deal with the pain. And she was born an hour later after my water broke. So everyone's predictions were right.
Wow. You didn't need the Pitocin.
No, in the end, they did not do the Pitocin. It just happened on its own. Yeah.
And you got nitrous oxide, but did you get the epidural?
No. And my doctor came in, I don't know, maybe around 7:30. So maybe half an hour after my water broke. And she knew I was really close to delivering, but she said, okay, the anesthesiologist is right outside. Do you want the epidural? And I was like, nope.
Just good for you, girl. Yeah.
Well, because I just kind of, at that point, I was already feeling like kind of like pushy and like she was going to come soon. And I just remembered the feeling that I was having from the first time. And I could have never pulled it out of my memory, but going through it again, I was like, oh yeah, I remember where I am. And I just said, there's no point.
You just like, that's, I mean,
she's going to be here in a few minutes. You know, I guess kind of knew that. And
you tapped into your goddess energy. That's what I need to chant. I channeled you my first birth. I'm going to channel you my second birth.
I mean, I don't know. I hope I can inspire you, but it was just a feeling like there's no point. I also couldn't even imagine myself at that point, like sitting up to get the epidural. in the first
place. Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting. Once my water broke, Archie came pretty quick. I feel like if I could, I was induced at 39 weeks and it was miserable because it took so long. So I think I needed the epidural because I was like having contractions for so long.
Oh yeah. And I 100% would have gotten an epidural, I think, if I had had a long, if I had been experiencing that level of pain for a long time. Yeah.
But I dealt with it for a good amount of time before. The epidural didn't help like that much. Like it did, but like, honestly, like I felt like I still was in pain. So I like how you were just like, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to go all in. Like I'm already here. I'm 100% just going to.
It was just because I knew it wasn't much longer. I think, you know, it's just like, and having done it before, I was like, I know I can do it a second time. Ooh, I had thought to myself that if this labor was long and, you know, long and painful and drawn out, that I would have liked to experience giving birth with an epidural because you're so present. I think, you know, like you get to be so present with an epidural because you're not having that level of pain with the, you know, I basically don't remember Henry's birth, like not very well. It's just this big blur. And I think, you know, when, for me anyways, just being in that amount of pain, I just sort of like checked out and went to another planet. I actually saw this really sweet quote. I think it was like on somebody's Instagram that said something like, when a mother leaves her body during labor, she goes up to the stars, collects the soul of her baby, and they return to Earth together. And I just thought it was like so sweet because it's kind of how it felt, like kind of like you're on this other, you leave yourself, but, and then you just come back as soon as the baby's born and the pain goes away. And there you are, there's your baby. So that was sort of my experience of it.
Bye crying. Oh my God. I love that quote. I have not heard that before. How has life been adjusting to being a mom of two? Like, can you believe it?
No. Sometimes I look at the two of them together and I'm like, I have two children. This is crazy.
When did this happen?
Yes. Like, who let me have two kids? You know, it's great. It's been a really wild ride. When we brought Emmy home from the hospital, my parents brought Henry over. You know, we made sure that we had some time to get home and just sort of settle in. We made sure that when he arrived, Henry arrived, that neither of us was holding Emmy at that time. We had her in her Dock-a-Tot, I think. And just because I didn't want him to see mommy holding another baby as like any sort of sign that he'd been replaced. It was just like, okay, she's in a neutral location. I had read somewhere that this can help. I mean, I don't know whether it did or not, but you know, so she was kind of lying there. And then my mom held her or something. So he had a chance and he was so sweet. I mean, he just like immediately wanted to hug and kiss her and hold her. And he understood it in this way. You know, I had no idea going in how much he understood about there was going to be another baby.
Cause he was like two in a couple months, right?
Two in a couple of weeks. Yeah. They're like really, their birthdays are close. Okay. So he had just turned two a couple weeks before. And so he was, you know, I mean, he wasn't really talking to me about babies coming or anything like that. You know, maybe some 2-year-olds would, but he just wasn't verbalizing whatever he was thinking about it or whatever he understood. So I wasn't totally sure. So it was really sweet because it seemed like he did understand that mommy and daddy had gone to have the baby. And when he came back, like there was going to be a baby and he was excited to meet her. We did the gift exchange. So, you know, got a present for Henry from the baby. And I had, you know, taken care to get something that I knew he would really love. I got him these trains that I knew at that moment he was really into these trains and he was going to get into it. So he was really excited to get his present and loved it. And I think, you know, all of it, I think he felt good. You know, I think it was a happy moment for him. And that was just the biggest relief ever. Over time, it definitely sort of sank in. Oh, this baby lives here now. And we've had definitely more moments of, you know, more challenging moments. I mean, the initial meeting and the first few days, he was just like a rock star. He was a dream. It was also really easy because with a brand new newborn, and Emmy was a little fussy and colicky and things like that, but basically she just kind of slept and was totally portable. And so for the first couple of weeks, I don't think it disrupted Henry's life as much as I thought it would. You know, she just sort of was like present, but sleeping all the time. We also had some breastfeeding challenges getting started. Breastfeeding the second time was actually a little harder for me initially. And so I was, for the first couple of weeks and after the first few days home, where it was clear that it was just not really working. I was having too much pain and, you know, she was kind of going hungry. I started to exclusively pump. And that also was nice. It, like the silver lining of that was that anybody could feed her. The bottles made it so that she was very, it was easy to feed her anywhere. So Henry's life was not turned upside down. He was still going to daycare. Then it was like the winter holidays. Daycare was closed.
Oh,
you know, Henry was home for a couple of weeks. Plus we had a COVID exposure in there. So he was home for like 3.5 weeks. And during those 3.5 weeks, we really, that became, you know, the time where we saw him doing the things that we expected him to do. A few more meltdowns, you know, mm-hmm. He was kind of like pushing back, melting down about a lot of things. He would do a lot of limit testing. Like, so if I was feeding the baby and I had my hands full and he knew that, he would just start like climbing on something he knows he's not supposed to climb on, you know, or things like that. Just sort of like pushing the envelope, just like, can I get away with this right now? So there was a lot of that. You know, we definitely resorted to more screen time than usual. And so that was fine, but felt a little guilty about that. And I think sometimes, you know, a lot of screen time can make him a little more cuckoo. So, you know, there was like definitely some challenges. Like once it kind of sank in, the baby was here. Once he's
like also home 24/7 and then like COVID exposures, everything and daycare, they get their energy out.
Yeah.
Like that I can imagine is super hard. I feel like just having a toddler home for that long.
It's hard. I really admire the stay-at-home moms that have a toddler and a baby, because it's like when you go from being a stay-at-home mom for one toddler to then two kids, it's like your job just got way harder.
I agree. I respect the stay-at-home mom a lot, because honestly, don't think I could do it. I don't know. No, I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. Especially now that there's two of them. I'm like, yeah, I could. I couldn't. maybe when they go to school all day, then that'd be great. That might be better.
Yes, I would be right. That is so helpful. You walking through so much of that process. And actually, speaking about like processes and systems, you also have a dog and you have a toddler. And just with a newborn, there's naturally just more things and routine. I always ask, like, how do people do it all? Like, how do people stay on top of the house? How do they feed their kids nutritiously? Like, you know what I mean? And that's our John and I's biggest fear right now with adding someone else is like, I feel like we're already at capacity. How are we going to do it? And I know people say, oh, you'll figure it out. But like, that's not helpful. Are there any like systems or routines that you and Ben have?
This is so like true that, you know, you have your family system when you have your one kid, you know, and I assume anytime you add a baby, you know, if you've got two kids, you've got your system and then you add a third, oh my gosh, it's going to like turn things upside down. Definitely. I was worried about that. I mean, like to some extent, the answer to your question of like, well, how do you feed your kid nutritiously and keep your house clean and all that? It's like, the answer is like, you don't.
No, that was not the one I was looking for.
For a little while, like something's got to give a little bit. You got to give yourself a little grace. Like, okay, we didn't eat so nutritiously today, but you know what? You know, it's survival mode for a while. The other thing that I think happens when you have two kids is both parents are sort of like single parenting a little bit. Like you kind of, it's sort of your like, you know, person to person coverage. So instead of getting really any alone time, your break is when you have only one child to yourself, you know? So like if I'm taking a shower, like Ben's got Henry. So that's great. He's helping, he's taking care of Henry, but I'm taking a shower while Emmy like sits in her bouncer and watches me, you know, or something like that. So there's a lot of that kind of juggling of like, you know, person to person. So that's definitely been, you know, how we've handled it is like a lot of kind of one-on-one time with each kid. The danger of that is that, you know, it's easy for it to be Ben with Henry, like dad with the toddler and me with the baby.
Yeah.
And I think what's been hard about that is that it's impacted my relationship with Henry a little bit. So I've been really lately, now that Emmy's a little older, really working to, even though it's less comfortable for Ben to take care of the baby and like, because he's not nursing her and whatever, and he doesn't spend all day with her. It's been a good thing. They are spending more time together and I'm trying to spend more time, like making sure that I do give Henry a bath or put him to bed or whatever, like try and do one of those things at least every day so that my relationship with him doesn't suffer. Because I was noticing that he was really, really preferring dad, which is adaptive and really, and sweet and great, you know, like Ben deserves it. He's like a great dad and puts in a lot of effort with Henry, and it's lovely to see their relationship. But I was starting to be heartbroken a little bit when he would say like, no, I want daddy, you know, like, I know, it just broke my heart. And so we've been really trying to make a big effort to be spending time with Henry one-on-one every day, just for a few minutes, or just giving him a bath, or just being the one to do something for him.
That's such an, like, another thing I feel like you don't think about when you're thinking about adding another, is like, how is that going to impact your relationship with your older child? I know John had a really hard time bonding with, I mean, John will never vocalize it. He'll never say it. He'll never admit it. But I believe that he had a hard time bonding with Archie as a newborn because they don't react to you, right? Yes. They're just, and then once Archie started to react to him, like laughing and smiling, that's when I could see the bond sink in. So I could see that too. Like, I can imagine that I'll probably be on like newborn duty and he'll be on toddler duty. So this is so helpful for me.
Was it hard for John that he wasn't feeling connected at first? Like, Ben had the same experience, and I think a lot of dads do. And it was a real disappointment. Again, I think there's this expectation that you're going to have this baby and immediately feel like in love with them and bonded to them. And I also think some moms don't have that experience. I think for dads who, or any parent who's not the birthing parent, you know, to kind of be maybe helpless, for example, if you're not able to feed the baby, or you're not, you know, kind of going through that postpartum together. I think it's just, it can be really isolating. So it was helpful this time that Ben knew that to expect that. It was really different. And I think it made the birth experience much more positive for him. And I think it made the whole postpartum experience more positive for him, because he wasn't worried that he didn't feel super connected to Emmy yet. Cause he knows that he will.
That's so true. I feel like, and because I think part of it is like social media and movies and everything. You always see these like dads crying, holding their newborns. And so it was disappointing for me too. And like, I thought that they weren't bonding. I really felt panicked. Like I was like, oh my God, like, I don't know. It's probably like instinctually deep inside, like, oh my gosh, my partner like doesn't bond with his child. What's going to happen? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you feel suddenly so insecure and sad. And I feel like we have all the hormones of like giving birth. And of course, some women like suffer from postpartum depression, and they have that blocker that you can't bond with the child. But I feel like for us, it's a little easier. But for the guys, like, they don't give birth, like, they just participate. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but just like really quick, you mentioned something about having Ben be more supportive of a supportive role for you during your second birth. Can you tell me a little bit more? Like, how did he, I don't know, how did you involve him like better the second time around or more?
Yeah, I do. I'm honestly not sure exactly, other than talking about it beforehand, like sort of reviewing each of our experience of the first birth and understanding what was, you know, what his experience was of it, what he was feeling during it. That helped me kind of understand. And then also kind of talking about my experience with him. And I think for me, I had wanted him to be a little bit more like, it was the best day of my life sort of a thing, or, you know, I'm proud of you. And he wasn't, you know, I don't think he felt like it was the best day of his life, partially because he didn't get that like bonding time with Henry that day or anything like that, you know? So he's like, yeah, I'm like thrilled that Henry was born, but like going through it, it wasn't like fun, you know, like I felt like, you know, sad when he got taken away and all that. So it was good to kind of review each of our experiences of that. I think the second time, so just knowing, just kind of like being open and knowing where each other was at was something that we really weren't before. So it was good to talk about it. I mean, one thing he did is he asked me a few questions, which I thought was really great. And so if your partner doesn't ask you this, you could maybe share with them, you know, he said something like, so what are you thinking this time? Do you want an epidural? Do you not want an epidural? Like, how can I advocate for you?
Ooh,
and it took a while to get to that question. You know, I was so thrilled that he asked it, because I think I realized like I needed to tell him that, and share with him what I was thinking. And so that really helped, like just getting on the same page before, like telling him, like, you know, cause like, I think it's easy the second time to forget about making a birth plan or, you know, whatever, if you, or just to assume things are going to go the same. So it was good to say where I was at and how I wanted him to kind of read me in the moment. Mm-hmm. And then in the moment, one thing I did do is I did try to like make sure that he knew how much he was helping me. And I mean, I'm not saying you have to go out of your way if you're in the throes of labor to do that, but it just helped to like, I just feel like I just made sure to like hold his hand and just be a little bit more maybe present with him during and telling him what was happening to me and things like that. I personally felt much more like connected and more like we were experiencing it together than I did the first time.
Okay. That is definitely tremendously helpful for me to hear also, because I feel like the first time around, we were both just like, it just felt like we were two kids. Like we had our like Nintendo Switch and our PS4. Like we brought like a bunch of snacks. It looked like we were like in an Airbnb. Like it didn't look like we were going to give birth to a child. So I feel like that's helpful to hear. I didn't know how to involve him. He didn't know how to support me. So the doctor was like, do you want to hold, you're going to hold her leg. And he was like, I'm going to hold her leg. And I remember thinking, and I was like, you're going to hold my leg. Like it was like, yeah. So this is so helpful. I feel like just what I'm hearing is that you and Ben just communicated more, which is something like John and I also like, sometimes we don't have like when you live with someone and you go through the routine and just the day, you don't really like talk like about meaningful, you know what I mean? Like, how are you feeling? It's like, sometimes you take for granted or forget to ask the other person questions, just a simple, like, how are you feeling about this? So I think maybe, yeah, if I could encourage, I'm taking notes. I got all the mental notes.
Yeah. Ask him what his experience was of Archie's birth and what he would hope for the second time, you know, too. And then of course, hopefully he's wanting to hear from you what you're thinking about and all of that.
So last question, because I know I feel like we're a little over. This is the big one. Do you have any words of wisdom for moms of one looking to add a sibling in the future?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know.
Loaded question.
No. You know, I've had 2 kids for 2 months, and in some ways it's still survival mode. I think though, it's really important to give yourself grace and don't be hard on yourself about how you feel during pregnancy. For example, if you're feeling guilt, if you're worried about bonding with your baby, just know that that's a really normal experience. When it's hard after the baby arrives and you're feeling worried about your relationship with your older child, that's also really normal. Remember that this is, you know, I hope that this is like a sort of painful transition. They're not always painful. It's wonderful too. It's challenging, but the result on the other side is hopefully siblings who can mean something to each other and, you know, completing your family. And so I try and keep that in mind and look forward to when my kids are playing independently while I sit and enjoy a glass of wine.
Yes. That's it. See, Alyssa's visualizing the end goal, which I agree. And something I try to think of too, especially now that we're kind of like, we're approaching that, like really the toddlerhood. Like I know Ben messaged me, he's like, once Archie turns 2, it's going to be, because I think he's like, it's like Henry turned 2 and it's insane.
Oh yeah. Everything is no. He wants to do it himself. You know, but also 2 is wonderful. I don't know if Ben shared this too, but I think both of us feel this way. We love him being 2. So I have to say it's 2 is hard, but it's also awesome. They just become more and more communicative, more and more like, I mean, he's hysterically funny. He's the funniest person I know. And they're just, it's great. It's really fun. So like everything becomes a little more intense, but you know, with their like resistance and their pushback and negotiating, but they're also really, really fun.
I have the same feelings. Like I'm loving how much older he's getting. It's just more fun, but there's also some challenges where I'm like, he just like stared at me in the face and like everything went on the floor. Like, I'm like, don't do that. It's like, he's looking at me like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And I'm like,
classic.
And I don't say anything. And I'm just like, we don't do that, honey.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
That's you're like, yeah. You're like, don't make a big deal of it. Don't make a big deal of it.
Yes. Cause you know, that's what they want. So I'm like, oh, hold it together. Don't flip out. And I'm actually pretty patient, but it's more like, why the heck would he? Anyway, that's a conversation for another day.
Oh yeah.
But
it's easy to project onto them that they're like totally manipulating you and like, and you know, worrying, oh, okay. He's throwing his food on the floor again. I guess he has behavior problems. I don't know. That's kind of where my mind goes, like that these are all normal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But I try to think like talking about the end goal, I try to think like, okay, this is temporary. Like this age is temporary. And like, I feel like getting a newborn, like and all the hard stuff, like it's temporary. So the end goal of enjoying a glass of wine,
Yeah, it's something to keep in mind. I mean, but I know we still have a lot more transitions ahead. Going back to work will be challenging, you know.
What's your childcare plan for when you go back to work?
My plan is to send Emmy to the home daycare that Henry goes to. I'll send her 3 days a week. And I am nervous about separating from her. You know, it's going to be hard. She's going to be so tiny. But I'll feel good about her being with Henry. And I just love and trust the woman who runs the home daycare. And I think that that's really important, is trusting whoever your child is in the care of. And then one day a week, my mom will watch her. And one day a week, temporarily, I'm planning to try and juggle everything because I just don't want to be away from her. I think after a few months of this, she'll just go to daycare full time if it's working out. So that's the plan.
Ooh. Okay. I love that. So it's almost like you're easing her in.
Yeah. That's what I'm really hoping to ease us both in. You know, when Henry was 4 months old and I went back to work, it was like the first day of shelter in place. I told that story on the first time we talked, and it was crazy. I was working around the clock. I work for a nonprofit, a social services agency. So the need for services was really great at that time. And we all were just working like crazy. And so I didn't get to ease in to work. So my goal this time is easing in, you know, just hopefully being able to draw some boundaries. That's a big pandemic lesson that mm-hmm. I've learned as a working parent, is like, got to know how to draw those boundaries. So really kind of prepping myself for that. And hopefully I'll be able to ease in by maybe saying no to certain projects for the first month or so, you know, like just kind of like getting myself back up to speed as I become ready for it, as opposed to all at once.
I love that. Thank you so much. I feel like we covered a lot.
I know. You probably have some editing to do.
No, this was all just like pure gold. And I know so many moms out there who are thinking about having number two are probably going to want to know all these juicy tidbits too.
Well, yeah, I think honesty and transparency is just the key to helping working parents, all parents, feel supported.
Well, thank you so much, Alyssa, for chatting with me today.
Thanks, Lena. It was so nice to talk to you.
Yeah. And for everyone listening, I'll make sure I include everything in the show notes. And thanks for tuning in, and stay tuned for next week for the next episode.
Thanks for joining us this week on the New Mamas Podcast. This podcast was created to help first-time moms everywhere navigate this new stage of life and talk about the honest and the raw moments in motherhood. I'm your host, Lena Forrestal. I'm a working mom by day and a blogger, photographer, and podcaster by mid-afternoon. And as a first-time mom myself, I'm on this journey with you. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And if you did, be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. You can donate to the show at buymeacoffee.com/newmamaspodcast. Stay in touch by following us on Instagram at New Mamas Podcast and Lena Forrestal. Thanks again, and stay tuned next week for the next episode. Bye!